From scratch.
Welcome to the From Scratch podcast. I'm Martin Cousins and...
My name is Nigel Bain.
The subject of today's episode is the Great Reset, why we need to rethink organisational learning. Now, Nigel, you were on a webinar, a learning technologies webinar last week, hosted by Donald Taylor, and you were sharing some of your thinking from your forthcoming book that will be out next year. And I was on the session, really interesting, looking at that whole concept of organisational learning and what that means for organisations now, and that idea of the Great Reset around learning. Now, you had some great questions from that event, so we thought it might be a good idea for you to just share a couple of those questions, because actually they're really kind of meaty issues. So how about if you just tell us a couple of questions and give us a couple of answers, because I think our listeners will find this quite interesting. I know I will.
Yeah, me too. So I was astonished by the lively chat session where people were asking questions and actually other people were answering the questions. So there was a lot of really interesting back chat going on that I missed entirely because I was so focused on trying to get my own sentences out in the less than incoherent way that I didn't have time to read them. So I've read those questions and read everything retrospectively. But I thought there are three or four questions which I thought worth sharing again. The first one was from Janet Edgecombe. Janet, who I used to work with me in the BBC many, many years ago. And Janet said, what about bottom-up mentoring to reinvigorate the learning process for those who feel they've nothing new to learn? And I think what I said in reply to Janet was that the idea that mentoring is a one-way street is complete nonsense. There's no evidence that if you mentor, you learn nothing from the process. It's the opposite. The best mentors learn as much from the people they mentor as the people they mentor learn from them. So I think bottom-up mentoring, where you are getting insights from the coalface, if you like, of what it's really like to work in the organization, should be not just, if you've got nothing better to do, an absolutely essential part of being a leader and being a senior leader. CEO should be talking to people at the sharp end, because there's nothing more salutary than getting a perspective on what life is like in your organization, having to adhere to your processes and your culture. And it can be, you know, a bitter pill and a great wake up. So if you want to change stuff, you should really understand from what base you're trying to make changes. So I think Janet is 100% right. That's the way to go. And Daisy asked me if I've always wondered what the difference is where the line between OD and the L&D function work. And the answer is there's no answer. You can't say, well, this is the absolute line, dividing line. It depends on context. But the idea that those two functions have nothing in common, and in many organizations, they're a long, long way apart and they rarely talk to each other, is also a nonsense. So I think if you're in L&D, you should be making inroads towards the OD people. If you're an OD, you should be making inroads towards L&D. And sometimes the best way to start is just to have conversations, just to say, can we let you know what we're doing? And can you let us know what you're doing? And see if there are any areas of overlap. And if you're about to launch some big L&D initiative, you should consult the OD people first and say, what are you doing that can help us? Is there anything that you would like to do that will make this whole endeavor more successful? So it's building bridges, and to the point where you get each other, you work together, perhaps staff are seconded into each other's area, yeah. And then ultimately you're actually part of the same team, because essentially there is no firm dividing line between building the organization and building the learning in the organization. They're not identical, but they're pretty close to each other. And Jana said, I think, a really interesting question. We really believe in community learning, but it's quite a lot of resistance. People don't want to, be put together and told to learn or told to share. And I think she's right. I would resist that if it was me. And I remember talking to communities of practice guy Etienne Wenger, and Etienne saying to me, why on earth would you put people in a room and say, share all your knowledge, share what you're doing? Because he said, no one wants to do that. And that is not a community of practice. A community of practice is working on problems. And I think that's the issue, Jana. If you have problems, challenges, and you've got people who are seriously getting together to solve those problems, and they know that what they come up with will be implemented, so they've got some serious skin in the game, you won't have any problem getting those that learning moving. It's only when you tell people it's about sharing or being nice to each other or tell us what you're doing, that becomes really tedious. It's about focusing on problems. And in the ODL&D, you know, that if the two are meeting, it shouldn't be, oh, we're doing this interesting thing. Oh, we're doing this. It should be, this is the problem we're trying to solve. Can you help us solve this problem more effectively from what contributing what you can contribute? So, you know, these, I suppose in some ways, those three things, three questions come together. Henrietta said, what have you found in your research and conversations about building and nourishing these connections? And I think that's right. That what I've found is that very few organizations build and nourish connections. What happens is little things, not little things, but groups grow up, connections are made, problems are solved, we move on. And those people no longer keep in touch. And within a year, we've forgotten all about it. Another year later, they're trying to rebuild exactly the same connections they had 2 years before because no one has bothered to keep them going. So I think the recognition that connections and community is important is the first thing. And many organizations really don't, as I say, they don't care, but they don't see it as a great priority. If you've got it as a priority to sustain those connections, you are keeping the neurons, if you like, firing in the organizational brain. And that is incredibly important. So just be aware of it, pay attention to it, and deal with it. And Peter Shepherd asked, innovation has to be key in solving business problems. But it's really difficult to innovate in any organization. You need permissions and all sorts of things. So if it is important, then I think you've got to, well, there are a number of things that are 100% critical. First of all, if you're going to innovate, you have to give permission to make small experiments, not bet the bank. You don't destroy the organization by doing ridiculous experiments, but you do test everything out and test new ideas out on the assumption that many will fail and some will succeed. And therefore, what is the learning from those that don't work? And how can we build on those that succeed? So everything is an opportunity. And the second thing is that if you're going to do that, you absolutely have to have some resources allocated. And resources can be a little bit of money to make things happen, but it's often people's time, permission to do that. You know, that Google had its 20% time. Well, that's a lot. And even Google didn't allow that, give that to everyone. They gave it mostly to their engineering staff. But if you're prepared to allow an hour here and an hour there, you're prepared to allow people to get together and work on something that is of common interest and then implement a little example of what they've come up with. That's the key. It's setting that context in which innovation is welcome, not a burden, not something you have to do on top of everything else, something where it's really hard to get permission. And even if you get permission, nothing is really taken forward because it's only the big, important people who can implement and ordinary people just don't get a look in. So that, you know, they're the kinds of challenges. All of this is around building an environment where query, working together, problem solving, learning from each other up and down the organization, learning across the organization, are fundamentally part of organizational learning. And the fact that people have picked that up is very heartening from my perspective, Martin.
Yeah. That's great, Nigel. So, you know, that was just the first of what's going to be four webinars in the build up to your book. And that's just some of the question and response from the first discussion. So it's sort of, obviously it's a very rich topic, isn't it? You've kind of, you're hitting on something that's really sparking a lot of discussion into topics that are quite fundamental to how the organization's operating, not just fundamental to learning. So we look forward to hearing about the next one. And if you want to sign up to those, I'm going to do an advert for Nigel's webinar series, which is nigelpayne.com/reboot-learning. And you can see what other webinars he's got up his sleeve there. So let's leave it there, Nigel. But that was really good. Thanks for sharing some of those questions and answers.
Thank you, Martin. I'm really glad that we got that out. I think it's quite important to surface all of this kind of under the water learning. So doing putting our money where our mouth is, doing what we should be doing. Thank you.
From scratch.